Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! This thing on. Hello?
Hooty hoot!
I diggity damn, I'm back. Oh, I tell you what, a week away feels like a month away sometimes. And I've been sitting around pawing at the earth and chomping at the bit and biding my time, just waiting for 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time to roll back around so we could get back at it. It is, of course, the fifth day of October 2015. This is our first broadcast in the month of October. I have been away last week occasioning that fact. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump over into the chat room. Yes, indeedy. We are now in session. Good evening, Earther. Good evening, Texas D. Good evening, Truth Seeker. And good evening to longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave this evening. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. And it's More and Monday, of course. And good God almighty, we have an embarrassment of More and riches this evening. I mean, I feel like I'm walking through some sort of, I don't know, the More ands are hanging from the tree, ripe for the plucking, like great bunches of bananas. It is on. Yeah, and it ain't even Wednesday, and I'm tempted to say, hallelujah, glory. No kidding. I missed you guys fiercely. Left here Monday, had meetings Tuesday and Wednesday, and then on the road Thursday and Friday. And we had a magnificent trip, Ferg and I did. He'd never seen Atlanta. And I hadn't seen Atlanta since 2002. I mean, and I hadn't seen anything except the airport. And I explained to him, along about Douglasville on I-20, you top a little rise and Atlanta is just sitting there before you. On the eastern horizon, rising up. I mean, it's like the Emerald City. It's one of the most beautiful views of a city this country has to offer. Right up there with popping out of the Mount Washington Tunnel and having Pittsburgh at eye level. Nothing like it. But I explained to him later on, because our conference was down near the airport, and as we left and got on I-85 to come up through the connector, I explained to him, I said, son, back when I lived here almost 30 years ago, the traffic in this town was crazy. But they've upgraded. Traffic here now is psychotic. And it was. It was. Jesus, God Almighty. whether it be out on the perimeter or through the center of town on the 75-85 connector. I bet you the finest race car drivers the world has to offer get the flop sweats going through there. Just nuts. But we had a magnificent trip on the way out of, well, and as many of you know, Mike and Kathy Malloy graciously had us to dinner, and then we went back and from the studio in the North Georgia Hills, I sat in for a segment of Mike's program, and that was great fun. Great fun indeed. And then the following morning, Thursday, as we headed out of town and went north, north on I-75 toward Chattanooga Stan, I had a hankering for a cup of coffee, and we pulled off at Cartersville, Georgia. And saw one of those brown signs, and it said, Etowah, E-T-O-W-A-H, Etowah Mound Complex. You know me. I'm not going to drive past that one. And it's not far out of town, out of Cartersville. Not far at all. It is a federally denoted site, what's left of it, of course. And there's a lovely little museum there. It is a mound complex from the Mississippian tradition, which is probably an overbroad definition in the first place. It is a city. It's where a city once was. Not a village, a city. And it even in what remains of it, it is breathtaking in its beauty. There are 3, 4, 5 extant mounds. And again, mounds is an unfair word because actually they're pyramids of a sort. The Egyptians and the Mesoamericans worked in stone. The peoples up here in North America tended to work in earth with stone cores. And the mounds, roughly, they're platforms is what they are. They're platforms. They had structures on top, and they faced to the east, and with their backs to the west. That's the orientation. It was beautiful, just beautiful. So we lingered there for a couple of hours, talked to the interpretive ranger about when the Spanish invader De Soto arrived there. He got the same speech he'd been getting for a while. City of Gold? Yep. Been there a dozen times. But it's a long way off. That way. And what happened is whatever town De Soto was in, idiot Spaniard, the people there pointed in the direction of the people they hated the most. Yeah, over there. Yeah, but you know what? Winter's coming. You got to get going because it's going to be. I mean, it's a long march. Because, you know, all you had to do was tell a Spaniard that there was gold to be had, and they were off and running. But there were neat things to be learned there, like the fact that along the way, people just dropped out of De Soto's expedition and decided to live among the civilized people they had found. And at that site, one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. A pair of carved marble statues, ritually, ceremonially buried, with the paint on their faces still extant. And if you want, I'll put them up on my Facebook page, Bob Kincaid. And you can see some of these things, incised shell pendants that made you look and go, well, yeah, I can see where there might be a connection with, Mesoamerican cultures. Just little hints at what was so nearly destroyed nearly completely destroyed. It was destroyed. The question is what little was left. And so we took that in. And we spent the next day or so winding our way back home. As Hurricane Joaquin made its way into the southeastern seaboard. Kind of watching the news all along the way. Listening to the news where we could get it. With a playlist that Ferg and I would go back and forth picking songs to listen to along the road. But eventually, we found our way back here to almost level West by Cole, Virginia stand. But not before, it is Moran Monday, by the way. It is Moran Monday. And we got lots of Morans. And one of those Morans, because the goddess of irony never sleeps, I have to give an early nomination to the folks at National Petroleum Radio. And whoever is in charge of the Saturday rerun department. Now, you may remember that during Hurricane Joaquin, somewhere in the Bahamas, a freighter was lost at sea. A distress call went out, and that was the last that was heard. They were taking on water. The Coast Guard now says that they're pretty sure the ship sunk in those heavy seas with 33 souls aboard. So lo and behold, come Saturday morning, we're listening to National Petroleum Radio coming up the road. And what was it? 10 a.m. They start the rerun of Car Talk. Now, Tom and Ray of Car Talk quit the program quite a while back, but they decided that it was such a winner money-wise that they would just go into perpetual reruns. I think one of the brothers actually passed away, but that's not going to slow down National Petroleum Radio. So every Saturday, you get a rerun, or at least we do here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia stand. We get a rerun of Car Talk. Right? Yeah. And you know how it was with Tom and Ray. They'd come on and, you know, ha, 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 aw, shucks, yuck, 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 don't drive like my brother, blah, blah, blah. And they opened with a joke. And it was a joke about a magician on a cruise ship. And the way the joke goes is that the magician figures out on the cruise ship he doesn't have to change his act. He can just do the same act week after week after week after week as the passengers change. But the only thing that doesn't change is the captain's parrot is sitting there in the auditorium night after night after night so the captain doesn't have to hear the squawking up on the bridge. And after a while, the parrot figures out the tricks and begins to make a nuisance of himself. Magician will be doing a trick, and the parrot will holler, "It's up his sleeve!" Or, "It's under the table!" Until finally, the ship sinks. And as they're bobbing on a piece of flotsam there somewhere in the Caribbean, the parrot finally on the flotsam with the magician, looks across at the magician and says, "I give up. Where's the boat?" And that was the program that they opened with on the Saturday immediately following the sinking of a seagoing freighter of U.S. flag registry in the Caribbean. because, you know, you wouldn't want to bother listening or anything to the program before you rerun it. Right?
Right.
So, just a little minor league nomination for the folks there at National Petroleum Radio who, well, really? But how they can't be faulted. It was the goddess of irony. It was predetermined prestidigitation or something. Yeah. Yes, indeed. It is Moran Monday. And no, this being the first Moran Monday back, it would not be right to not jump out there with, with all the bells and whistles now, would it? He said, noticing that the Calliope music was just not going to play. Let's try that again. Nope, nothing. Come on now. This cannot be that difficult. Oh, by the way, this is an independent commercial-free broadcast. And we rely upon the goodwill of friends of the program, the community that exists here, to keep it all going. Traditionally, Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge goes on the table with the first of the month, and I did mention that whilst I was gone, we eventually did, thank you very kindly, Don and Terry and Catherine, we did eventually knock down the remainder of what was gone from the waiting from the previous week. And so... thanks go out this evening with Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge on the table. Thanks go out to those who have jumped in on it. Remember, Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is a double your money kind of thing, which is really, really helpful. And so, consequently, we have less to raise this evening than might otherwise be. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Leroy, and thanks to Grant, and thanks to Sister Carol Baker. We have, let's see... we have $65 to go in reaching Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. $65. Of course, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and so too, well, that's where you go to make all your decisions about credit cards, PayPal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, the mailing address, which I neglected to mention at the beginning of the program, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWB 25801. I should probably say that more slowly. But then again, if you're listening in a podcast, you can just back it up now, can't you? And remember, checks and money orders need to be made payable to The Horn, not to Bob Kincaid, because I never see him. That's part of the stuff that Boss Man Wayne does. So, hey, let's try this again.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
¶¶
That's right, that's right. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You will not believe your ears. It's more in Monday on the Horn. Right here, off the Midway, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you will find more ends, the likes of which will absolutely bedevil your imagination and your credulity. We have them all. Right-wing Morans, birthers, deathers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, ninthers, deathers, every kind and variety of Moran imaginable. Indeed, we have libertarian Morans, we have Bircher Morans, we've got them all, the entire weird panoply of the right wing in the greatest country in the world on earth. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this here is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yes, indeed. And adults are warned to keep a close eye and perhaps even a hand on children, small pets, that sorts of things, wallets, purses, European messenger bags, as the Morans can get grabby. Oh, yes, indeed, yes, indeed, yes, indeed. It was just a week ago today that I was howling down I-64 westbound out of West Ballycole, Virginia Stan, and through a couple of counties in Kentucky, and then lo and behold, there was that sign, Round County, Kentucky. There it was. We passed through Moorhead, didn't stop. And it was out there on I-64 that a van with blue flashing lights went blazing past on the in the left lane of I-64 westbound. I'd never seen the light. Maybe that just goes to show that I don't get around enough. But I had never seen the lights. It said Round County Coroner. And the blue lights were flashing. Yeah, I was kind of at a, I mean, it, coroner? I mean, ambulance? Sure, flashing lights, you gotta get somewhere in a hurry. Lives are at stake, but coroner? But we saw Round County written on the side of the van, saw the blue flashing lights, Ferg looked at me, I looked at Ferg, and we both, at the same time, as if predestined, as if somehow touched by powers beyond our control, said, nah, couldn't be. Wishful thinking? Absolutely. But no, I presume that Sister Clerk Kim Davis is still among the quick. Oh, well. But Morans? Oh. Oh, we got Morans. We got Morans, up to our eyeballs in Morans. Because remember, part of the time that I was gone, I spent in my native land, Alabama, for the particular purpose of visiting the graves of my parents. It had been more than 3 years since last I had been there to pay my respects, and perhaps I'm a bit of a sentimentalist, but I still miss them. 1997 and 2007, they stopped being sitting up mud. And, I felt it necessary to go and see their last resting places. And the South is a place of conflict. I know, but the gun thing. And you know, I don't want to talk about Roseburg, Oregon. I don't want to talk about Umpqua Community College. I suppose it's impossible to touch upon it insofar as there's nothing like a mass murder, nothing like a massacre to bring out the Morans in this country. But I was kind of focused on being last week. I was kind of focused on being in Alabama at the time, which I realize is a backward place, and a place that is in the grips of the weird. But the fact that I was down there, and I would almost be in the same town with
Mike Huckstaby by a matter of hours, and I'm kind of glad I wasn't, because while I realize you guys got my back and would gladly put up the bail money, let's not do that. Brother, Reverend Pastor, former governor, presidential candidate, diabetes, snake oil salesman, Huckstaby, could you please, and there comes the cops and the pepper spray. Don't tase me, bro. Yeah. But even as I was down there, the state of Alabama engaged in an exercise in, shall we call it, time travel, going back 50 years. Because Alabama is dead broke, because folks down there elect people to government who believe that traditional conservative, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered family values mean that you cannot have the government that is responsive to the needs of the people, or even that is the people. That whole we the people thing seems to be lost on the right wing down there. From birth, people in Alabama and most of the old Confederacy are taught to think of the government as them and not us. Well, Alabama, being broke and being real tired of having a whole generation of having to put up with people who have a high melanin content in their skin of voting all the time, and recognizing that with every passing year, the skin tone of the entire country gets a little bit darker, and being fearful, therefore, of their tenuous grip on power. Well, they decided to do something about it. Now, in order to cast a vote down in Talabama, you got to have yourself a picture ID, a photo ID, attesting that you are who you say you are, from where you say you are from, etc. And you can only get those things at your local Department of Motor Vehicles or Division of Motor Vehicles. You probably already know about this, don't you? But it deserves a nomination on this year More and Monday. So lo and behold, the state of Talabama, in its infinitely white wisdom, has shut down driver's license bureaus in 8 of the 10 counties with the highest African-American populations in the state. Not really. In every single county in the state of Talabama, where people of color make up more than 75% of the registered voters, the state of Talabama has decided to close the DMV. Of the 15 counties that voted in, that gave the nod in the 2012 presidential election to President Barack Obama, 53% of those 15 counties just got their DMVs closed. The most Democratic voting counties in Alabama, Macon County, Greene County, Sumter County, Lowndes County, and Bullock County, their DMVs got closed. The 10 counties that voted most solidly for Barack Obama, 8 out of 10, 80%, they got their DMVs closed. That's 31 driver's license offices. Because conservative family values. In the same state where you can drive by on the highway and see things like the Saturn V rocket that carried our astronauts to the moon, the space shuttle, other high-tech scientific space-related achievements, just standing out there, and they really do. They grab your attention from the highway. You're like, what? My God. Because if you as a kid perhaps watched, say, the moon shots, I mean, you knew that the rocket that launched the Apollo program, the Saturn V, you knew it was big. But you really didn't get your head, you don't get your head around how big until, you know, you see it standing there. Yeah, that Talibama. Talibama, where a sleepy little village called Huntsville was transformed almost overnight into a booming bastion of brains and talent. That Talibama. The town that welcomed Werner von Braun. The rocket goes up. Who knows where it comes down? It's not my concern, says Werner von Braun. I forget who did that. Was that Firesign Theater? Or the Lampoon? It's always stuck with me. So, you know, the question then is, becomes one of, well, what do you do if you want to vote in Alabama? Because, after all, the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, Scalia, and that Kennedy guy, well, they've already declared that there's no more racism in Alabama. I mean, just because all those DMV locations where you would go to get a picture ID so you could vote, just because they happened. I mean, association is not causation, right? I mean, it just worked out that way. Sure it did. Sure it did. But that's not all. Let's stay right there in Talibama for a minute. Because, and this is kind of fascinating, there are 67 counties in Talibama. And in at least, notice, at least 9 of them, well, the probate judges down there have gone all Sister Clerk Kim Davis. And by that I mean there are 9 probate judges who are relying on a statute that was passed during the civil rights struggle by the all-white Alabama legislature, that said that probate judges may issue marriage licenses instead of shall issue marriage licenses. Now note, there's no other governing body in the state of Alabama that issues marriage licenses. That's all under the jurisdiction of the probate judge. Right on time. I knew the minute that I said moon landing and astronauts to the moon. There's Marty. Bob, 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 Bob. That's almost a song. Don't you know that the moon landings were faked? Productions directed by Stanley Kubrick. After all, there appears to be a video of Buzz Aldrin putting up a light in the window of Apollo 13. The guy called into Malloy. It must be true. It's the most elaborate hoax in the world. But anyway. So, if you want to get married in Alabama, there are residency requirements. Let's say you live in Lawrence County and you want to get married. Well, you got to get your marriage license from the Lawrence County probate judge. You can't run over to nearby Limestone County because you don't meet the residency requirements. Well, the 54-year-old segregation statute comes in. Washington County Probate Judge Nick Williams tells the Associated Press, "It is a religious freedom issue, but more than that, I believe it is a constitutional issue." Yeah, whether two people who love each other can get married. So, let's understand. Now, he's not pulling, this is a coordinated effort that has largely been ginned up by those grifters over at the Liberty Legal Services, whatever, you know, Matt Staver and that gang of pettifogging crooks. And Nick Williams, Washington County probate judge, is desperate to get him some airtime. "I am willing to go to jail just like Sister Clerk Kim Davis done did." She's still not in jail, is she? Anymore. Even though she's just held up a middle finger to the federal judiciary in the United States of America and the ideal of rule of law. But there are at least 9 counties in Alabama where marriage licenses are no longer being issued. And they're not being issued because of that law from 54 years ago that says that probate judges may, not shall. So in at least 9 counties, it doesn't matter if you're straight, gay, bi, LGBTQ, QQ, nobody can get married. Because Jesus freedom. Tallying the populations of those 9 counties together, on the order of 78,000 Talibamians don't have access to marriage licenses. The AP reports that no one has yet sued. But that's nobody. Now, here, let's just strategize for a minute. Strategize. This law was originally passed by the all-white Alabama legislature to prevent miscegenation, to prevent the muddying up of the white gene poo. Yeah, that's P-O-O-L. It just gets pronounced poo. That's it. Mm-hmm. So what we need is an interracial couple. I mean, let's just make probate Judge Nick's head just plumb splode. Get it over with. Maybe a couple of interracial lesbians or interracial gay guys need to go in and apply for it an interracial straight couple. That might even be the best, because then it would become abundantly clear that statute, and again, this is not about states' rights, this is about the Constitution of the United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, and whether the Constitution is in fact the final word on the law in the state, in the United States of America. Because clearly that Alabama statute with the shall and with the may and not the shall needs to be struck down. And in point of fact, the simplest way to do that would be for an interracial couple, preferably straight, not trying to be offensive here, but just making this as easily legal as possible, strategically wise. You need a straight interracial couple to march their loving selves into the Washington County probate judge's office saying, "We're here to get married. We want a marriage license, please." Nope. And the minute he says nope, well, ACLU files the suit. It goes through the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Alabama. Then it goes to the, what is it, the 5th, or the, maybe it's the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, and eventually winds up on the desks of the Supreme Court of the United States, where we always find the rats and that Kennedy guy. And by the way, in case you weren't paying attention, it is the first Monday in October, which means we have some Supreme Court morons to nominate. Oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do. Marty asking, prevent the muddying up of the gene pool. Is that just a black man and a white woman, or would that include a white man with a black woman? If that does apply, my two sisters will have a problem. Oh, it applies to any time that the law of God is violated by a mixing of the races. I believe down south they refer to that as mongrelization. Mm-hmm. Really, they do. Because, see, it would be so much fun to have the Alabama statute challenged in the Supreme Court of the United States, because one of the people who would have to vote to strike down that their statute would be none other than Clarence Coke Can Slappy Thomas, being how he's married to a white woman. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know. Do the Thomases, Mr. and Mrs., do they have any children? Have they mongrelized the races? I'm not sure. I honestly don't know the answer. But it would be delicious, good fun to read, even if it was only a two word opinion. I dissent. To see Clarence Coke Can Slappy Thomas dissent from a decision striking down the 54-year-old Alabama law as unconstitutional. No, it wouldn't make his head explode or anything. There'd have to be a brain inside there to create cranial pressure enough to do that. But still, it would be fun. Thomas J. Thomas, comma J, colon, I dissent. Whoop! See him walk through the door. You dissent, do you? Mm-hmm. What's her name, Virginia? Didn't she work for Karl Rove or something? Okay, thank you. Update from the Horn fact-checking department. No, Jenny Thomas's jungle fever did not extend to progeny. So the races remain unmongrelized by the Thomases. Maybe that would be the rationale that Clarence Coke Can Slappy Thomas could rely on. I don't know. So we got that going. It's, as you can see, at 17 minutes before the hour, it's going to be a busy evening. And by the way, thanks going out to Glenn and to John, who have finished off together, between them, finished off the Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge for the first of the month, you know, back Thursday. Thank you very kindly. And with that, I have a note from Brother Deacon Asa, who said, Brother Bob, since you refuse to admit Mussolini, you know, Godzilla from Wasilla, into the Moran Monday circle, I'll have to resort to using unkosher tactics to get her back in. I hereby issue a $100 half-term, half-wit challenge to commemorate the Titanic moron that she am. Don't disappoint me. No, I think that was directed at all of us. Don't disappoint Brother Asa. And you know what? I will, on his behalf, I'll issue that challenge, if for no other reason than the lovely syntactical expression, the Titanic moron that she am. That's why I are going to do that. So there's a $100 matching challenge on the table now, which is great. You heard him there. Brother Deacon Asa has offered to double, as Shirley in Wisconsin did the first 200. Brother Deacon Asa has offered to double the next $100 that rolls in. 5 at 20, 10 at 10, 4 at 25, 8 at 12.50, 2 at 50, 1 at 100, 3 at $33.33, etc., etc., etc. Like I said, I am... the West Coast version of the fact checking department says the Thomases did reproduce one child, Jamal Adeen Thomas. Oh, that's from his first wife. Well, no, that doesn't count. That's not miscegenating, I don't think. Oh, we've got ourselves a lovely day of Morans, a lovely evening of Morans. Now we're gonna fight over the honorifics. Marty taking issue with Brother Deacon Ace's reference to Mussolini Caribou Barbie as a Titanic Moran. Marty says, only a Titanic Moran? Are you certain she's not an Olympic Moran or a gigantic Moran or a Britannic Moran? We'll stop before it turns into a thing. It'll be Meet the Feetles all over again. Like I said, I'm sure that what happened in Roseburg, Oregon, has been completely, thoroughly, fully, and absolutely discussed. You know where I stand on it. It happened because we're okay with it happening. I'll say this much. President Obama... and he meant well saying this, and I'm not being mean to him over this, but he said that we as a nation have become numb to these shootings. I think I speak for the entirety of the Horn Family Commune congregation when I say that there's none of us here that are numb. We're heartbroken. We're devastated. And yes, we're scared. Because we recognize that it is a roulette wheel, and the little white, and I do mean white ball, can drop just about, and not just about, can drop anywhere in this country. Lafayette, Louisiana, Tucson, Arizona, Blacksburg, Virginia, Roseburg, Oregon, Newtown, Connecticut, and on. And on, and on, and on. We're not numb. And yeah, we are scared. Because every community in the United States has a contingent of paranoid, freaked out, ginned up, gunned up people who see mass killings as a way to A, reach fame, B, start a race war, C, take our country back. Etc. We're not numb, Mr. President. We are what? Resigned. We are resigned, President Obama, to the fact that this is going to continue to happen here in the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Because we as a country want it to happen. Because we are a country where every time a helicopter flies over, there's some paranoid, pasty-faced, doughy white guy who runs outside saying, "Marvelline, Marvelline, get the AK-47. The helicopters is done come. And we're going to defend Vietnam! Wolverines!" Yeah. We're resigned to it, Mr. President. Because the government is owned lock, stock, and smoking barrel by a group of paranoids called the NRA. And their owners in the firearm industry. Because the fear the NRA gins up is the worst kind of dog whistle racist politics this country has to offer in the second decade of the 21st century. We're resigned to it. And we just don't know who it's going to happen to next. But Mr. President, we know it's going to happen. Because nothing's going to be done. Now, it took us a few decades, but we have finally managed to socially shun people who do socially unacceptable things. We expect cigarette smokers to leave the building to participate in their filthy addiction. I'm not speaking ironically here. Where once upon a time, a la Mad Men on TV, people lit up cigarettes in aircraft. We find that in the second decade of the 21st century to be crazy, just nuts, rude, hateful. And smoking generally. Culturally, we look at people who smoke as kind of disgusting individuals. Because we have been conditioned to do that. Because cigarettes are vulgar and nasty. And deadly. And they're so vulgar and so nasty that we really don't give much of a damn about the addicts. Right? But we can't seem to bring ourselves to do that with the firearms, and particularly, you know, handguns and semi-automatic rifles and such like. We can't bring ourselves to do that with that. We can't point. See, if you point and go, "Oh, look, the filthy, disgusting smoker. Yuck, stay away from him, precious lumpkin. He's revolting and uncouth." You can do that with a smoker. But you can't do that with the guy who's such a pissant coward that he can't go to Walmart without strapping a hog leg on his hip to go and get a jug of milk and a loaf of bread. You know why? Because he might shoot your ass dead. The most the smoker will do is maybe come over and blow some smoke in your face, and then you dial 911 and get him arrested for battery. Yo, but that freedom protector? You point at that freedom protector and talk about what a social disaster he is, what a what a walking hunk of vulgarity he is. And he might just decide you're a threat to him and kill you dead. Because that's the country that we have resigned ourselves to living in, Mr. President. Isn't it? Sure seems like it. I mean, I really do. I keep my opinion to myself because I don't want to get shot. But I look down my nose at people who want to carry guns in public. I think that they're vulgar and disgusting. But we don't dare say it. We don't dare say it. In other words, this country, far from being numb to repeated mass murders, we are held hostage. This entire country is held hostage by the National Rifle Association, who, interestingly enough, and you know this already, when the NRA has their Clavering Conclave every year, guess who has a gun-free zone? Yeah, sorry, you can't bring your Freedom Protector to the convention there at the Busted Knuckle Civic Center, because Wayne LaPierre and Ted Nugent and the rest of the Freedom Protectors and Chuck Norris and whatever, well, they're afraid that your white ass might bring a gun in and hear something you don't like and decide to start shooting. So therefore, the entire, every year, annual National Rifle Association convention is a gun-free zone. Me? I think that guy that can't go down to get a mocha choca bullshit down at Starbucks without a piece strapped under his arm or around his waist or whatever, I think that guy's a chicken shit. But we can't say that. Oh, no. And I mean, will anybody in the for-profit media even say that? No. Who was the guy, the talker out in Denver? What was his name? Can't remember now. Used to goon on the Klan on the air and talk about what a bunch of chicken shits they were. And one night they followed him home and blew his brains out. So don't be looking for Rachel or Larry or Tweety or Emmy Award-winning Chris Hayes to be talking about firearms owners in those terms anytime soon. And I'm speaking specifically about the people who have to strap on a gun to pull over on the interstate and go to the restroom. Because it's a nuanced discussion. And I have different opinions about having a shotgun because you like to go turkey hunting versus having an AK-47 for home defense and to sling over your shoulder and ramble on down to the Chili's. There in Dime Box, Texas. Oh, okay, Earther making perfect sense. The reason the NRA is a gun-free zone is because the NRA is the Center of Freedom Protecting. That's FREE-DUMB. Kind of like the eye of a hurricane, Earther says, has no winds. So, no, the for-profit media are not going to actually talk about how socially unacceptable these godforsaken paranoids are. If they were walking around with one hand down their pants scratching their asses and one finger up to the third knuckle picking their noses, yeah, we could talk about that. But let them have a gun on them, and nope, not gonna. I was trapped in traffic on Northside Drive in Atlanta on Wednesday afternoon. And because Atlanta, really, Angelinos, yeah, you can climb down off the cross about your traffic now. We need the wood. Atlanta has you whooped. As Kathy Malloy pointed out to me, Atlanta now has the most congested and god-awful, snarled up, mixed up, messed up, fouled up, screwed up traffic in the entire new United States of America, because freedom. So I'm sitting there, the goddess of irony. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm like a cardinal in the maybe I'm the pope of the goddess of irony. I don't know. But she sends these little gifts along the way. We were listening to the radio, and remember, this is Georgia. We were listening to the radio, and there's somebody on the radio was talking about those people from Alabama. And understand that those people from Alabama talk about those people from Mississippi, and those people from Mississippi talk about those people from Arkansas, and vice versa. Arkansas talks about those people from Mississippi, too. And Ferg, who does not understand the whole Southern dynamic really well at all, because he's just not, he wasn't immersed in it, and it is an immersion kind of thing. Berg says, Dad, I mean, why are they talking about Alabamians like that? I mean, you were raised in Alabama. I said, I know, but it's just people from Georgia think they're better than people from Alabama, et cetera, et cetera. And I've explained the domino theory, Mississippi, yada, yada. I said, and they all think you're a freaking ignorant hillbilly because you're from West Virginia. Huh? So even at that point in time, traffic came to a standstill, and I look to my left, and there, driving a dump truck, is a guy, and no kidding, he's got an Alabama, with the script A, Alabama Crimson Tide football hat on, and he does. He's got his little finger up to the third knuckle, just a mining away. Mm-hmm. But anyway, back to the for-profit media. And how we talk about guns. It wouldn't be More in Monday without a clip from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. In this case, Tucker Carlson, and a new Fox Attack blonde. I've never seen this one before. I think there's a factory. Anna Kuiman, Kooiman. Also part of the B team is Clayton Morris. Yeah, they've got Tucker Carlson working weekends now. Eh. Oh, this is going to come with a special meaning for our buddy Robert in Australia and other members of our Australian auxiliary chapter of the Horn Family Commune Congregation. You guys up over there, well, you ain't free. No, you're not. Miserable slaves of tyranny, there you are, and right there in Australia. It's just sad. real sad.
Well, other news, of course, we saw from the campaign trail this week a lot of discussion about guns and arming those who would protect our students at college campuses across the country and high school campuses across the country in the wake of that horrible shooting at the Oregon College campus. Donald Trump, earlier on the show, says that these gun-free zones are a complete disaster. Listen to Trump just a few minutes ago.
That was a gun-free zone in Oregon where they had no guns allowed, no nothing. So the only one that had the gun was the bad guy, and everybody was sitting there, and there was nothing they could do, not a thing they could do. Actually, the police did a fantastic job getting in that quickly, but there was nobody with any protection, and wouldn't they have been better off if somebody in the room, anybody, you know, anybody, had a gun to at least help them out? But it was a terrible thing, and these gun-free zones are a disaster because everybody's just a sitting duck.
You can mock Trump, but this is a rational point. When there's a
note. Oh, did I mention? See, I've been away for a week, and I slip a little bit. Hockey puck. Hockey puck. Get the hockey puck and the duct tape. But one, when Tucker Carlson says that something is a rational argument, you can just about bet your bottom dollar that you'd have to take about a million mics of acid in order to make it a rational argument. Oh, dude, yeah, definitely rational. Oh, the walls are breathing. No. And second, it wasn't a gun-free zone. That has been debunked. That is what we call, and this is a professional broadcast term, a lie! Mm-hmm. Really, a lie. So let's hear Tucker explain why that's a rational argument, shall we?
Drunk driving accident, you don't ban cars, you try to prevent drunk people from driving them. The idea that taking guns away from the law abiding will make us safer is insane and childish.
Yeah, insane and childish. Wait a minute. Didn't he just defeat his own argument? We don't ban cars because of drunk driving. We try to get drunk drivers off the road. Don't we try to get drunk drivers off the road by taking away their ability to drive until they've learned their lesson not to drink and drive? Because I'm pretty sure we do. And we put them in jail, too. That's a different discussion, whether or not one needs to be jailing drunk drivers. But you get the point. So we can't have any meaningful firearms access laws because it won't stop all firearms deaths. That's the benchmark standard from the geniuses, super genius, Tucker Carlson, over to the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. So I guess we can be getting rid of those arson laws too, because laws against arson don't stop all arson. Laws against rape don't stop all rape. But wait a minute, he's a Republican, so he'd probably kind of get off on getting rid of the rape criminal statutes, wouldn't he? Yeah.
We just talked yesterday about the number of guns in American households has actually gone down as these mass shootings have gone up.
Exactly.
So can you blame more guns?
Well, we also spoke yesterday to the former high school football coach at the Ohio high school that protected his students there when there was no one else to protect them from back in 2012. And he said by having armed guards at the school, people who are trained, who know what they're doing, police officers who are trained in this would have absolutely protected.
But this infantile focus on the tool of the violence.
Infantile. Childish and infantile. See, he uses arguments like that because Emery and Marveline sitting there in their matching Barca loungers. Marveline, did you hear that? He said it was infantago? That Tucker Carlson, he's some kind of smart. He uses them big words. He's at least three syllables there. Yeah, see, Berther gets it, pointing out we can't have any traffic and transit laws neither because people still speed. Tear down the roads now! Yeah, there's a reason we do Fox News TV Radio Rwanda clips so often on Moran Monday. That entire network was just made for it.
violence. The gun. What kind of gun? Where did the gun come from? How big is the magazine? Really?
Yeah, really. I mean, where the gun came from is kind of important. Did he get it legally? Did he get it illegally? If he got it legally, how'd he get it legally? Like the guy who shot up the the reporter and the and producer there in Virginia. He got his gun legally because our idea of making sure someone should be able to, someone should have a firearm is, hey, you got a pulse? Stick your right. Yeah, that's definitely a pulse. What kind of gun you want? Ain't got no felony record, do you? No, I don't. Even the guy, even though the guy's got a tattoo sticking out of his sleeve that says felonies and 1, 2, 3, 4 crosshatch, 1, 2, 3. No, I ain't. Yeah. So I think it's okay. Granted, Tucker doesn't like it, but I think it's okay if we inquire where the gun came from. Or guns. Because dude in Oregon had a ton of them. I mean, for God's sakes, up there in poor old New Jersey, Chris Christie has pardoned 3 people who were charged with illegal gun possession. He pardoned them. That means the crime never existed. It's completely gone. Alternate universe.
We don't need more gun laws. We need to enforce the ones we have.
Yeah, how's that working out? Just asking. Oh, by the way, dear God, I hit the scan button on the radio periodically, and, you know, it's nothing but right-wing radio. I mean, unless you live in some little corner of civilization, the chance of finding a progressive broadcaster going across the dial, forget it. So there he was. The Savage Wiener, Michael Savage, referring to President Obama as the thin one. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that it was on purpose or nothing, but isn't it odd that this here shooting happens there in your Roseburg, Oregon, just as the thin one is trying to get the deal that's gonna crush Israel, that deal with Iran. Not saying, just saying. Not saying, just saying. And he said, not saying, just saying, for like 15 times. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this professional radio, I got to figure that out someday. It's kind of like that old Sports Illustrated commercial from way, way, way back when that featured Steve Garvey, you know, squeaky clean Steve Garvey holding in his little Dodgers uniform, holding a baseball bat, standing next to the Raiders' Lyle Alzado. Oh, Lyle Alzado, and they're talking about how awesome Sports Illustrated is. And at the end of the commercial, Lyle Alzado looks over and takes Steve Garvey's bat, because Lyle Alzado is known for playing dirty. And he takes Steve Garvey's bat and goes, "They let you use these things in the game?" Sure. I got to get me one of these. I got to figure out this professional broadcasting thing one of these days.
I mean, a lot of people have guns at home, and they're not shooting strangers. There's almost no focus on the guy who did it. Why did he do it? What about his life caused him to murder people he'd never met before?
But of course, we can't be looking into that because the people like that. I mean, that freedom. I mean, Second Amendment. If you go looking into people's backgrounds, you're probably infringing on liberty. Sit, liberty, sit.
Yeah. That would be worth having that conversation.
The other side of that argument, though.
Oh, here comes. Okay. So the Morris guy's got the other side of the argument. And by the way, way, way back when, remember the guy who did such a pitch perfect impression of St. Ronnie of Raygun? Wasn't his name Morris? You know, he kind of did it all squinty eyed and greasy headed, and everybody went, whoa. I think. I don't know. I'm wondering if, because this guy looks like his grown-up son. Never mind.
Oh, of course, is in what people always throw out there. It's like, look at Australia. They have no gun violence. They don't have guns. Citizens aren't allowed to have guns.
They also have no freedom. You can go to prison for expressing unpopular views in Australia, and people do. And
yeah, they have no freedom in Australia. You got that, Robert? Hey, John Fox. David, you got that? You're not free. You have no freedom. Because Tucker Carlson done said so. No freedom. Zip, zilch, nada, niente, blip. No freedom. You're just walking around in your little matching gray outfits with your little Chairman Mao hats on, doer looks on your faces, and that whole shrimp on the babby thing is entirely just, it's a Potemkin shrimp. Mm-hmm. All those lovely young Australians who gavotted about in Dance Academy. Nope. Sorry. All those Australians on those Australian soap operas. Nope. Hillsong Church. Big fraud. No freedom in Australia. I bet you Robert just bit right clean through the hockey puck.
In Western Europe, by the way, and in Canada. No one ever says that.
That is the other side of the argument, that if this guy had a knife instead of a gun, would all of those people have been killed, or would fewer people have been hurt?
But also, we have a Bill
Wouldn't
of Rights.
Wouldn't have been going through their...
Yeah, we got a Bill of Rights, damn it! Them Australians, they don't have no rights! Is it time to grandfather Tucker Carlson? Hell, is it time to grandfather Fox News TV Radio Rwanda? One begins to wonder. Yeah. I had a note earlier. Goodbye, Tucker. Had a note earlier from Robert in Australia. He said, as you're probably aware, and I'd seen it earlier, we had a second terrorist shooting here in Sydney over the weekend. A 15-year-old kid, a teenager, shot an employee of the New South Wales Police Service at point-blank range before being shot dead by police. Of course, the various racist hate groups here in Australia, sadly we have them, have jumped on the incident to push their own agendas. Apparently the shooter had been radicalized. Sorry, you put it in quotation marks, Robert. I have to do that. And was known to frequent an Islamic bookshop. Robert notes, the only piece of information I cannot find an answer to is where this kid got the handgun. Someone had to have given it to him. You can't buy them. They're illegal. That's it for now, Robert says. I'm so sick of what the world has become. I thought after the Cold War ended it might get better. It seems to have gotten worse. Yeah. Hey, here's two words you never hear anymore. Yeah, do you remember this blast from your past from 1992? Peace dividend? Peace dividend. Oh, what a knee slapper. Peace dividend. But see, let's remember, if Australia, but you can go to prison in Australia for having an unpopular view. He said that. Yeah, because he's a moron. Really? Thank you to Henry for meeting a big chunk of Ace's half-term half-wit challenge. Desperately trying to shoehorn Godzilla from Wasilla back into the Moran conversation, you know. The born-again virgin, Bristol Palin, declared that Hillary Clinton fears her mommy's power. Fear my mighty sword! Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So we've got $25 to go on Asa's half-term half-wit challenge. Thank you, Asa, for making it. Thank you. Thank you, Henry, for meeting so much of it. Much appreciated. Roger, in Oregon. Subject line, Umpqua Community College NRA defined non-event. Roger says the initial blackout on information from the sheriff's office was apparently so that their PR people could coordinate with the PR folks from the other truly important groups, NRA, Chamber of Commerce, GOP, etc. They decided that the best way for them not to be associated with the massacre would be to not let it be named in the first place. They would pretend that it would harm the deceased to not hear his name in connection with the mass killing. Yeah, that'll fix him. Those little wry moments. But it's really meant to make it harder to refer to the sheriff NRA-sponsored event. I don't agree that the sheriff's hard work in helping bring the event to fruition should go unnoticed. I also think that the Christy Titus 7:37 a.m. Twitter tweet, how to have a clear sight picture for precise and accurate shots, helped him decide to go ahead and just do it. So I propose that the killing of the nine be referred to as the Hanlon Titus Massacre at Umpqua, because they're around to enjoy it, unlike the Mercer kid. I don't think we need to dwell on the coincidence that there happens to be an FBI satellite office in Roseburg. Because, of course, and we all know this by now, the sheriff there is a notorious gun humper. He even signed a letter to that one in our White House about how guns are the cornerstone of freedom! Wolverines! So if we said enough, catching up, have we said enough in the way of catching up with the Hanlon Titus shooting? Yep, Roger, it works. Hashtag GOP gun logic. Drunk drivers kill people. The solution is more drunk drivers. And, you know, I'm sure the GOP could make a credible argument on that. 47% of all traffic accidents are caused by drunks. That means 53% are caused by sober people. You can't evade that kind of logic now, can you? I mentioned earlier that it is, in fact, the first Monday in October. That means the nine elected judges in black robes are back in business. And just by way of making sure that the people who have for the last 500 years or so been disenfranchised from this little chunk of the planet that they called home. The Supreme Court marked its return to business today by sticking a thumb in the eye of Native Americans. Now, this is kind of a gross and creepy and sad story. Sorry. You remember Jim Thorpe? One of, if not the most amazing athlete of the 20th century. Educated at the brutal, truly brutal, so-called Indian schools, where the federal government attempted to rub out the last vestiges of Native culture. And eventually showing himself a talent for a number of sports, including the young sport of football, Jim Thorpe played college ball at Carlisle College in Pennsylvania, also known as Carlisle Indian School. And he absolutely destroyed what was passed for the record books at the time. And he was unstoppable. In 1912, he went to the on behalf of the United States to the Olympic Games and Summer Games in Stockholm, where he won gold medals in both the decathlon and the pentathlon. At the same time, he had played some minor league ball, and so because the Olympics were deemed to be sacredly amateur, they never were, they never will be, you know, it's kind of hard to argue that that some prince from the House of Windsor who competes in the equestrian sports back in 1912 is somehow an amateur. But Jim Thorpe's medals were stripped from him. He continued to play athletics, even despite a great deal of racism and bigotry. And he had a short and brutal life. Well, relatively short. By 1953, he was 64 years old and had descended into, biographers say, alcoholism. And in 1953, he had a heart attack and died. He had married three times, and his wife at the time of his death, Patricia Thorpe, was bound and determined to make a buck off of her deceased husband's corpse, literally. She wanted to sell Jim Thorpe's corpse. And so, as the Sack and Fox people in Oklahoma were conducting a sacred ceremony to give dignity of the passage of Jim Thorpe's spirit into the spirit world, with a little help from law enforcement, Patricia Thorpe kidnapped Jim Thorpe's corpse. And eventually, she had him buried in Pennsylvania against the wishes of his blood family. About the same time, a couple of boroughs in Pennsylvania just happened coincidentally to decide to merge. Mauchchunk and East Mauchchunk, Pennsylvania merged into a town that they called the Borough of Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania. And so, consequently, the body of Jim Thorpe was buried there in 1957. Litigation has been going on for some time. Remember, this is a Moran Monday nomination. In Scranton, Pennsylvania, U.S. District Judge Robert Caputo, back in April of 2013,
held that for purposes of the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, known as NAGPRA, the borough of Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, was a museum. And if the borough of Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, is a museum, then under NAGPRA, Jim Thorpe's remains must be returned to his lineally nearest relatives. Patricia Thorpe, the corpse hustler, is, by the way, dead. Presumably, she got what she was after, to wit, money. Now, the borough of Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, has maintained, well, we treat his grave with dignity and honor. But under District Judge Richard Caputo's ruling, Jim Thorpe's remains would have to be disinterred and returned to the people who loved him and care about him. The case was brought by direct descendants of Jim Thorpe, as well as the Sac and Fox Nation. The Native American Grave Protection and Repatriation Act is what makes it illegal for, say, a member of a wealthy white family to go and dig up the skull of, say, a revered leader of the Native resistance and take it back to his fraternity clubhouse at an Ivy League college. You know, the Bushes and the skull of Geronimo, allegedly dug up by the first Prescott Bush at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and taken back to dear old Yale. But, of course, the skull and bones won't admit that they've got the skull, so there's not much that can be done relative to NAGPRA. But it's also why NAGPRA is. It's also why some rich one percenter can't sit around with a skull sitting on his mantelpiece. A few years ago, they were digging up a parking, clearing the way, excavating for a parking garage in Logan County. Logan being the county seat of Logan County, West Virginia, when they unearthed some remains. The story stays with me because it's a case of doing the right thing. Excavation stopped. Archaeologists were brought in. The burials were treated with a degree of respect. And DNA testing was done to find out which native group in this country was most likely related to these 15,000-year-old burials. And they were determined to be Lakota people. And consequently, the graves were the burials were repatriated to tribal officials among the Lakota. But this is a Moran Monday story, and consequently, it's not going to have a happy ending. No, the borough of Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, created expressly for turning the body of Jim Thorpe into a tourist attraction. You know, we used to have those up and down U.S. 60 here in this little neck of the woods back before the interstates came through. They had one in a curve of the road, had a bunch of concrete painted animals, you know, giraffes and elephants and bears and gorillas and stuff. I think the gorilla still exists. Had a sign said, "See the baby rattlers." A lot of suckers got taken in by that. Pay your money, your quarter, whatever you walk in. Glass display case. with a bunch of baby rattlers in it. You know, rattles, like you'd give to a baby. You know, just making a nickel off the tourists. It's the hillbilly way. I mean, after all, coming from out of state, they paid enough money off us. But no, the borough of Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, appealed Judge Caputo's ruling to the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, and the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said, nope, Judge Caputo erred by saying that Mr. Thorpe's remains should be repatriated to the Sac and Fox Nation. And from there, 2014, and this is some pretty swift movement when it comes right down to it, it made it to the Supreme Court. And today, on its first day back, those 9 unelected judges told the Sac and Fox Nation to go piss up a rope. They just denied cert. Certiorari being the process by which one asks the Supreme Court to hear a case, and without elaborating, the Supreme Court said, get fucked. Because that's what we've been doing to you for the last 500 years. No reason to stop now. So Jim Thorpe's remains will remain in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, a place to which he had no ties and to which he apparently had no desire to be buried. Because even though he excelled at playing a white man's game and lived in the white man's world, and was arguably done in by the white man's poisons, he never stopped being the native that he was. And arguably damned well deserved, after the indignities to which he was subjected in life, to at least have a decent burial among his people. But no, this is a capitalist nation, and we don't want to interfere with the folks there in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, being able to make a buck off of Jim Thorpe's moldering remains. Because freedom. Because capitalism. Because America. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Yep. As a postscript, the plaintiffs in the case said this outcome will not change Indian people's desire and demand to have their beliefs and customs respected like those of the greater American society. My only quibble with that quote is to say that I think maybe American society at large, but greater doesn't exactly work in that context now, does it? But that's... And even walking around on that Etowah town complex, I felt a little bit of unease because it's had the Dickens excavated out of it, and I don't necessarily know that that's a bad thing per se, because if we don't learn what we can learn, then everything is lost. and there was too much, such a brilliant culture there to simply pretend that it didn't exist. And that whole area of Georgia was once covered with these kinds of towns. From what's known as the Woodland period all the way back to, you know, the beginning of the Common Era, current era, what we once called AD, up to the 1500s, when DeSoto and his diseases arrived. It was in the aftermath of DeSoto's arrival that the village there at Etowah fell apart. Hard to maintain a complex and rich culture when everybody's dying of diseases that were brought by the strangers who suffer from a disease of the heart that can only be cured by gold. I was moved, really moved, by what I saw in the museum there. They didn't have any bones on display. They had it right. It was a, you know, it was a U.S. government protected place. But to stand there and look at the work, I mean, aliens, ancient astronauts didn't build those pyramid platforms. Hard-working human beings did. And the barrow pits, the borrow pits, they called them, were there to be seen, where the earth had been moved to create the platform mounds. One basket full at a time. And that's a lot of basketfuls. It's one of the most brilliant examples of the Mississippian culture that remains extant alongside places like Cahokia. There's a lovely stream that runs right nearby. There was a huge plaza out in front of the main mound pyramid. Great flat space on top. Lots of assumptions made about chiefs and sort of an interposition of European notions of kingship onto a people about whom we do not know that they behave that way. Absolute monarchs were few and far between in the native societies here because, frankly, absolute monarchies don't work too well. Instead, you had people who were developing concepts of democracy long before white folks even arrived here. The interpretation said that the plaza was used for purposes of tribal gatherings and group ceremonies and their favorite sport. And they discovered, I mean, you want to talk about a sport? Holy cow. I mean, most people know what lacrosse is. I know we've got some members of the Horn Family Commune congregation who have played lacrosse. Not an easy game. Imagine lacrosse played with rocks. Not just any rock, but rocks that have been cut and polished to a perfect roundness. Imagine hockey pucks made of stone. They had some of these on display. This is one of the things that we would not know about were it not for the fact that, you know, some attempt to understand has gone on. And apparently the game was played with something like a lacrosse stick. Only the pucks could be stones. They could be both hurled with the stick or thrown along the ground with the goal of trying to put the rock in the goal of the other side. The game could be played one-on-one, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 5-on-5. We don't know how large the teams got. But, wow. And, I mean, those things, you know, you flick that stone with that stick, and it's gonna move with some force. I mean, it could break a bone. And imagine this. Think for a minute about Michelangelo. Toiling away, chiseling the Moses, or the Pietà, or God knows, the David. Sitting there with his chisel and his hammer, tick, 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 you know, creating the David's, you know, tiny little package and the hands that are way out of proportion unless you're at the right distance, and beautiful, and in this gorgeous white marble. Well, North Georgia is known for its marble as well. And these two statues that were ritually buried there at the foot of the mound expressive faces. You can look them at try Etowah statues, Etowah, Etowah statues, Cartersville, Georgia. You'll see them. They are marble. And they were carved without the benefit of a single metal tool. Imagine the genius that goes into that for just a moment. Shell discs with incised figures and tremendous detail, carved without metal tools. Sheet copper.
Huh?
Sheet copper. Hammered flat. And again, decorated with various motifs, some of which involved eagles. Painstaking. And this kind of thing was to be found throughout the first people's cultures. And as we walked through the little museum, I'd look at Ferg and say, remember, son, your ancestors referred to these people as savages. So I thought of all of that in conjunction with the Jim Thorpe story and the fact that very little changes. Funny, if Hobby Lobby had sued to have a grave removed to say the based on its deeply held corporate religious beliefs to remove to a cemetery somewhere in, what, Oklahoma? The rats probably would have said, well, hell yeah! Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a feeling we're going to have a very merry little term of court in Washington. There's all kinds of stuff coming up for the rats to screw up. And they're off and running. The term of court begins... often, with a list of cases that the court has decided it doesn't want to fool with. Challenges to appeals court rulings that they decide they will let stand. In particular, Todd Newman and Anthony Chiasson were a pair of... traders on Wall Street. Todd Newman was with Diamondback Capital Management, and Anthony Chiasson was with Level Global Investors. Yeah, they're hedge fund hustlers. And as part of the tepid attempt of the Obama administration to at least rein in some of the greater excesses of Wall Street, they'd actually been busted for insider trading. And they took their cases to trial, and a jury, tried and true, in the federal district court in the Southern District of New York, convicted them. You know, for cheating in the Wall Street hustling scheme. Well, once they were convicted, the two defendants appealed to the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, and the appeals court said, no, let them go. Let my people go. Yeah, let them go. I mean, they're hedge fund managers. They cheat. The three-judge panel in the Circuit Court of Appeals said that these two hustlers were too far away from the original leak of the insider information. And so when they traded and profited on the insider information, well, they might not have realized that they were using insider information from Dell and Nvidia. They might not have known that the information didn't come from legitimate industry analysis. Apparently the case turned on whether Newman and Chiasson had knowledge that the insiders at Dell and Nvidia exchanged the secrets for a personal benefit. I mean, this is just stupid.
Todd and Tony, come here.
Yeah, I got some information for you. You might want to act on this.
Yeah, it comes from some dudes over at Dell and Nvidia.
Yeah, it does.
Nah, it just came from these guys. Did they get any personal benefit for giving us the information? You don't know that.
So when the Supreme, when the Circuit Court said, "Let them go, turn them loose, let them go and find some more insider information to trade on," the Obama administration's Justice Department appealed the case to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court today said, "No, we expect people on Wall Street to behave this way. You got a lot of nerve, you know that. You got a lot of nerve trying to put people in jail for just doing what Wall Street does. Get out of here." And here's a little ha-ha. According to Bloomberg News, as many as 10 other convictions may be overturned because the Supreme Court refused to even hear the Obama administration's appeal. So, while the Supreme Court does not kowtow to Native Americans, they will bow and scrape and grovel and roll on their backs and wait for their little tummies to be scratched by Wall Street. Kind of lets you know who's in charge, doesn't it? I mean, all the social issues. No, when it comes down to the money, no. No. Told you it was going to be a busy Moran Monday. A daggum two-hour filibobster. Now, how did that happen? 5 minutes before the hour, and again, we have we've got exactly $25 to go to meet Brother Deacon Ace's half-term half-wit challenge for Moran Monday. And many thanks to those of you who have helped out along the way and helped get us caught up. Yeah, Steve in New York asks, traitors or traitors? I know. Don't be so hard on them, Steve. They're just capitalists doing the work of the Lord. Moran nomination coming in from our buddy Jay in the desert. Moran nomination, the headline writers of nearly every news organization. Ooh, this should be good. The cargo container ship El Faro, en route between Florida and Puerto Rico, has sunk. The news headlines all report that there were 28 Americans on board, and there appears to be no survivors. This is yet another example of how ingrained American exceptionalism in our country. In fact, there were 33 crew members on that ill-fated ship. But I guess one is expected to believe only the Americans count. The other five were just foreigners. Thank you, Jay. Indeed. And in fact, I'm proud to note that when I mentioned the story earlier, I mentioned that 33 people were lost in the sinking of the El Faro. Really? I didn't see that. But I am not in the least surprised. The other five, well, hell, they don't count. They ain't Americans. Americans don't care if other people who ain't Americans die. Hell, we barely give a shit if Americans die, as if it's related to some pissed off white person with a bunch of guns. That's just the price we have to pay for freedom. Oh, yeah. By the way, nice group going in the chat room this evening. Good evening to Earther and Kathy and Labor Man, Mr. Gibson and Mighty Mouse and Sentient Being and Will in Chicago, all capably moderated by Lottie and Sparky, Man Cave. Evening, y'all. Yeah, that's true. In regard to the insider traders, Kathy notes, yeah, but they were sure determined to put Martha Stewart the hell away. Now, she was a desperate criminal, you know. Of course, they didn't put her away for insider trading. They put her away for lying to the FBI, because that's what they could get her on. Speaking of the court system, here's another dandy. Thank you, Carol, in regard to the two-hour filibobster. You've fallen and you can't shut up! yeah. Daggum, that guacamole ad, video ad always looks tasty. Apparently one is supposed to use Rotel. I love Rotel. For this court case, we go to Ohio Stan. It's the case of a 12-year-old boy. 12-year-old boy at a private Catholic school by name St. Gabriel Consolidated. Thanks, Isaac, for sending this in. You know, kids will be kids, but not in Merca. Because you never know when one of those people's gonna be a terst. Especially if the 12-year-old in question is, you know, black. According to court documents, a precious little girl in the class was intimidated when the 12-year-old boy and she had a staring contest. Because God knows that's never happened. You know, the contest you play when you're kids and sometimes when you're adults, when you just stare at each other and try not to blink. Now, even though she was intimidated, the little girl was said to be giggling the whole time it was going on. The little boy was compelled to apologize. This all happened in September of 2014. Apologizing, a little boy wrote, "I never knew she was scared because she was laughing. I understand I'd done the wrong thing. That will never happen again. I will start to think before I do, so I am not in this situation." Candace Talbert, the boy's mama, said, "The perception is he intimidated her. My son stared at a girl who was engaged in a staring game. She giggled the entire time." She also went on to note that the same girl that accused my son of this act of perception of intimidation aggressively poured milk on somebody else's lunch. When she did that, there were no penalties for that. She received nothing for that. The child has been suspended, was suspended. And the parents sued, and the court in trial held that the principal there at St. Gabriel Consolidated Private Catholic School was completely in the right for punishing the little black child for staring at the little white child in a staring game in which the little white child was laughing. This, of course, is reminiscent of what was called the eyeball rule that was the order of the day through much of the United States. For a very, very long time, in which black people were forbidden by unstated law to look a white person in the eye. The St. Gabriel Consolidated Handbook says, "The principal is the final recourse in all disciplinary matters and may waive any and all rules at his or her discretion for just cause." Really? Any and all rules? Like the rule against murder? Or flogging? Or dunking? Whew. The family will appeal the case. Of course, if I think most of us would say, if we were offering any advice to this family, we would say, get them the hell out. Get your child the hell out of that school. And, you know, the funny thing is they probably sent their kid to the school in hopes of avoiding problems in the public schools. How's that working out? Yeah, I know. So I probably should open the phone lines for those of you who have been just sitting and waiting patiently for yay verily low this here long week that I've been gone. You know the numbers I trust. Wait, did I forget the number? 304-574-8178 is one of the lines. 304, the stress line is 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. And you are more than welcome to participate. With my having been gone, we'll wait on a break and not shilly-shally about, and let's go and talk to Jim out in presumably Nevada-stan. Is that where you are, Jim? Oh, Jim. Why am I not? Oh, wait, wrong button. Sorry, I have been away. There we go. Hi, Jim. Still wrong button. Hi, Jim.
Do you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you now. Just
hear me little, now.
Yeah, I got you. Just
AT&T or whatever.
Yeah, just a little rusty.
Great filibuster, man. Fantastic, man.
Well, thank you.
I was remembering when you talk about a plethora of different things, but like in Covington, Stan, when I was living there, and I lived there about, I just moved back, and I was, you know, I lived there 2 years, 2 years ago, and I had to go get, you know, ID card and voter registration. And, you know, being a patriotic American citizen to the degree. So I went ahead and I did that. But when I went to go vote, I, the woman says, this is a couple of years ago. Well, within the last 2 years. And she goes, I had my voter card, and you need picture ID. And I thought, picture ID? I don't recall ever needing a picture ID, you know, as long as I was on the voter roll. And I went ahead and I purposely left out the picture ID. And she says, well, bottom line, she says, well, you're not going to vote unless you have a picture ID. And I thought about making a big deal about it, but it's just like, yeah. So I showed her the picture ID, and I wasn't too pleased about that. They kind of pissed me off a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
It shows, you know, they'll do anything to stop the quote-unquote wrong people from voting. You know,
well, I mean, really, Jim, they're scared. They know they're outnumbered. I mean, in Talibama, it's not. I mean, I'm sure the Republicans, the good God fearing, upstanding, Bible believing, Christ centered Christians there would tell you. I mean, it's just a coincidence. I mean, it's just that we broke here, but they're not so broke that they shut down the DMV in the majority white areas. They shut down the DMV in the majority black areas because, after all, well, you know.
So wait, can those can they register? Do they have to go and register in the other?
Well, if you want a driver's license or a photo ID of any sort, you're going to have to haul your ass to wherever there's still an open one. But the thing is, if you look at the map with the counties on it, it runs through areas of Alabama where, you know, counties are contiguous with one another, and you're going to have a pain in the ass getting to the next county seat over.
Yeah, and the other weird thing about that is the cutting down on quote-unquote government jobs. So the, I mean, I guess one day soon they'll be promoting getting your driver's licenses through some sort of private corporation.
No, they won't. What? No, because then they might be a mean. No, then it might get easier to get an ID. The whole purpose is to keep people. I mean, if you've already put it out there, you know, don't you expect to be coming and voting here if you ain't got no photo ID? And then if you make it impossible to get a photo, I'd like a photo ID. Oh, I'm sorry, we just closed.
I know, but don't you think this is capitalist America, you know? I think
No. This is one of those big government, small government things, Jim. And remember, Republicans believe in small government. Okay? And
yeah,
we want it just small enough to keep anybody from participating in it. Yeah, or at least anybody that we don't want participating.
Yeah. Just small enough to drown it in the tub, yeah. The other thing, you mentioned Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I went there with my dad and my two brothers. My dad received an award for his service in World War II and being, I think that's where he trained to be an observation pilot. Now he flew in basically Piper Cub over the enemy front lines of, you know, wherever we were reoccupying or and stuff like that.
Right.
That Fort Sill just rang. I've heard that name before. I think I've been there before.
Well, I mean, you know the larger story there, that Prescott Bush, who was the father of George H.W. Bush and grandfather of W., et cetera, et cetera. Prescott Bush, he was apparently a real live POS because, among other things, he sent he went across with the American Expeditionary Forces in the First World War and wrote a letter home to his mother about how he had saved the life of General Pershing, which she immediately turned over to the newspaper in Columbus, Ohio, and was printed with great fanfare by the newspaper there, but it turned out to just be a giant lie. And that's part of the reason that the Bushes got out of Columbus, Ohio, and went to Connecticut. Prescott comes back, and apparently the story goes, grave robs the grave of plunders the grave of Geronimo, and carries the skull back to the tomb, I think is what it's called, of Skull and Bones there on the campus of dear old Yale, Bula Bula and all that shit.
Yeah, I was an atheist when I was 14. Didn't kind of get Buddhism and been pretty much out since I was about 25. I draw that in reference to any organization where you're going to swear allegiance to or something like that. Like fraternity crap I never went for in my school days. Not that it mattered. I think Great Neil Young song, Cortez. You ever heard of
that? Oh, Cortez the Killer? Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a great song to play.
Ooh, good suggestion.
Huh?
Good suggestion.
Yeah, I just thought you might want to play. You're not playing any bumper music, but maybe tomorrow.
Well, I am now. Well, how's everything going out in Nevada-stan?
Okay, well, I'll just go through it. There's so many so much crazy crap there. It's unbelievable. I mean, what goes on, what passes for government in this country. And I guess every country ends up being like that. Those with the money rule, and or the power, which is basically in a capitalist society. I mean, do you think there's any way there's some sort of, halfway reached agreement could come, but I think the money power has too much power right now. They're not going to cede anything, they're not going to, I don't see that happening. No matter how optimistic I get I'm real optimistic about Bernie and everything looks be going great.
Well, hey, 32,000 people at a Bernie rally in Boston is pretty impressive.
I think so. Well, I was at the one in Covington. I think he's having one out in Vegas. I can make two Bernie rallies in a year. You think that has some sort of cosmic effect?
I wouldn't argue about it. But of course, 32,000 people showed up to hear Bernie in Boston. Did the for-profit media? Nah, not so much. Nothing to see here.
Yeah.
But like I noted on social media earlier or last night. On the other hand, I was watching the Sunday night football game between Dallas and New Orleans, and by God, there they were touting Monday an exclusive interview on the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Hillary Rodham Clinton as NBC's Today Show travels to New Hampshire for a pancake breakfast.
Yeah, I noticed how they do everything they can not to even mention his name. You know, omission by not mentioning almost in a little, every little bit. I mean, I don't watch much, but sometimes I'll tune over to the evil Fox News, and they it's not even mentioned in it. But that's such a shill game. I mean, anybody who watches that and thinks they're getting any semblance of "quote unquote reality," as if they're getting that much more off any other corporate news media, is very, very misinformed. The tummy scratch, great. I love the tummy scratch analogy. That's great.
Well, it kind of fits, doesn't it?
What was that?
I said it kind of fits, doesn't it?
Well, on that note, I'm going to let you know, everything I had in the... But that's weird about you mentioning Fort Sill, and I was like, Fort Sill, I've heard about that. Yeah, I did go there, and it's... But it was me and my blue blazer, my kind of long hair. It wasn't that long, but my dad, he's wearing his uniform. Because it's weird. He did, I think he signed up in 40, 39, 40. And, ended up being an observation pilot, like I said. And then like in 67, he was totally, I mean, once he started the JFK investigation, blah, 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 he had no problem with deciding that they were, that corporate America, the military industrial complex, and like, was wrong. But I guess some people are more indebted to the people or the system that got them there. I guess that's just the way it goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
No, I get it. Yeah. Are you having a hard time? Are you having a hard time hearing me, Jim?
Yeah, so I'm gonna let you go.
Okay, I'm wondering what I've broke here on the gizmo box or nothing. Never a dull moment. All right, Jim, you take care and have a good night. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Nevada-stan. I even double checked the gizmo line, the stress line, to make sure. I don't know what the issue was. But that line's open, as is the other line, 304-574-8178, if you want to get in on the conversation. Because we got lots more stuff to examine. By the way, it's been a bit of a nervous day in the wake of the latest Second Amendment lottery. They're on high alert and will be for a couple more days down in Kentucky, on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University. Somebody scrawled on a bathroom wall down there, kill all by 10/8/15. Actually, it says kill all by 10/8/15. This OOP. No idea, but people are rather concerned, and authorities are asking for anyone with information to please call the Eastern Kentucky University Police. It was in the men's restroom at the student center. Earlier this year, someone scrawled on a bathroom wall, "Bringing gun to here, H-E-R-E, 2/11/15, dead students." They haven't caught the scrawler, nor has there mercifully been an instance of the Second Amendment lottery at Eastern Kentucky University. That's not all, though. The day passed fitfully in the Philadelphia area. It wasn't a bathroom wall that the threat maker used in Philly. It was a message board called 4chan, the same message board used in advance of the Second Amendment lottery at Umpqua Community College. It said, "On October 5th at 1 p.m. Central Time, a fellow robot will take up arms at a university near Philadelphia. There are, suffice to say, a number of institutions of higher learning in the Philadelphia area." So there were heavy police presences all over Philadelphia today at places like Drexel University. Villanova as well. Radnor Township Police Lieutenant Andy Block said, "What's really amplifying this is that the threat is coming off the same social media website that happened with the very tragic shooting in Oregon last week. Can we please retire the word tragic? I'm sick of it. Every goddamn one of these instances of the Second Amendment lottery, some member of the for-profit media is out there who never got past tragic, desperate for, call it, just say another shooting. Because if they were tragic, we would do something about them. But they're not, so we don't." Remember, tragedy comes from the Greek root word that refers to the noise that a goat makes when it realizes it is being led to its own demise. And it is a pitiful sound. And that's where they got the idea, the concept of tragedy. But please, use another word, for-profit media, please. Predictable. Unsurprising. I mean, those seem to work. And those are, you know, accurate. Yeah. Oh, in line with the Jim Thorpe story and some of the stuff I was saying about the Etowah complex, out of the Los Angeles Times, the dentist took down Cecil the Lion, a doctor in Mono County, California, has been indicted on 21 felony counts that have to do with allegations that he looted Native American artifacts from tribal and public lands, including Death Valley National Park. Dr. Jonathan Bourne, B-O-U-R-N-E, is 59 years old. He's an anesthesiologist at Mammoth Hospital. And a while back, there was a picture posted on a hiking club's website of him digging a wooden bow out of a melting glacier in the High Sierras. He's a looter. Or what was, back when I was messing around in the discipline, was referred to as a pot hunter. Bourne has been charged with 8 counts of unlawful transportation of archaeological resources removed from public lands, 6 counts of unauthorized excavation, removal, damage, or defacement of archaeological resources removed from public lands, 6 counts of injury or depredation to government property, and 1 count of possession of stolen government property. If he was to be convicted on every count and sentenced to those all of those convictions consecutively, he would do 98 years in prison. That will not be the case. He would also face forfeiture of all of the vehicles and equipment that he used in connection with the violations. I guess it's too much to hope that he drove his Porsche to go and loot the native sites. Or his Maybach. Because the dude is well off. Another case, you know, this is just another case of 1% behavior. He lives in a mansion that looks down on the High Sierra ski resort community of Mammoth Lakes. He was due in court today in Fresno. At the time of the LA Times story, federal prosecutors, they said, were expected to recommend a sentence of less than 20 years in prison. Well, isn't that special? What did he loot? What did he steal? I mean, it's not like he just... No, this wasn't he just, something he just happened to do while he was hiking. No, no. When the Forest Service special agents served the search warrant at Dr. Bourne's mansion last December, they collected 30,000 artifacts. The time span that the artifacts covered, to the extent that one could determine that, and of course because these were all excavated with no provenance, no damn data, it comes to about 11,000 years of human history on this continent. He also logged his finds. I guess being a millionaire anesthesiologist wasn't enough for him. He needed something to make him feel, you know, human, complete. Something, hey, look at me, I'm like Indiana Jones. So he kept a log of all the stuff that he looted. Dart points, obsidian cutting tools, 3 etched stone tablets. Obsidian cutting tools, etched stone tablets. You know, these are painstaking crafts. You know, you can imagine the man. He's got a piece of maybe deer hide in his hand, and a core of obsidian. You know, volcanic glass. Stuff will cut you if you look at it the wrong way. So sharp. Obsidian scalpels have been made and used in experiments, and they turn out to be sharper than the sharpest surgical scalpel steel. But imagine that man sitting there. He's got a piece of antler in his hand. And he's got an obsidian core laying on a piece of maybe deer or buffalo hide, what have you, to protect his hands. And he carefully, you know, first you take a big rock and you expertly strike the core to cut off the flake, and then you take the flake and you sit there and you I've seen it done. It's brilliant. You can watch it online. It's mind blowing. And the next thing you know, you've got this sharp as hell tool that it's hard to make things that sharp today. Or incised tablets. You know, that's not just somebody sitting down and doodling on a rock. These are things that are made with purpose, that exist coming out of a broader cultural tradition. And Dr. Bourne, well, he just wants to own it because this is an ownership society. Anybody want to look up his voter registration in California? Can you do that in California? I got money, says he votes Republican. Oh, do come over for drinks later on the weekend. I'll show you those magnificent tablets that I excavated in the desert, because after all, I am an amateur paleontologist. Amateur archaeologist, I'm sorry. Newton Leroy Gingrich is the amateur paleontologist. There were glass beads that he took out of a cremation and burial site. The bow he stole was made of juniper, and he got it out of a melting glacier in the Sierra National Forest. And just in case you were wondering, a guy named Bob Bird from Fresno organized the hike that Bourne was on. It was August 19th, 2014, and Bourne hollered, according to Bird, quote, that he had discovered a Native American bow sticking out from the ice and rock in what remained of a glacier. And then he used stone tools to chop the ice around the bow to extract it. Later that day, according to the post that Bob Burt wrote, he said, Jonathan would only say that he had been mistaken about his find, and it turned out only to be a stick, though he couldn't say this without a grin on his face. On the other hand, he's hired Mark Coleman, a pettifogging Fresno criminal defense lawyer, who said, my client spotted a piece of wood which appeared to be recently exposed from an ice patch as a result of global warming. Recognizing that if the item had any historical significance, it would quickly decay from exposure, Dr. Bourne recovered the item. Lawyer Coleman went on to say that my client was going to have a well-known and respected archaeologist examine the bow in hopes of determining what organization should receive the item. And he was just going to keep it there at his mansion, you know, with the other 29,999 items until he had found just the right organization. Of course, no organization is going to be interested in it because, again, no provenance, no goddamn data. Interesting family, the Bournes. The LA Times story notes that the case sends a strong message. It is illegal to collect artifacts on public lands. That's according to Kathy Jefferson Bancroft, who is a tribal historic preservation officer for the Lone Pine Paiute Shoshone Reservation. But Dr. Bourne had a brother, Dr. Andrew Bourne, who was chief of staff at Mammoth Hospital. And 3 years ago, he committed suicide after he got arrested on suspicion of illegal communications with a minor to facilitate sexual activity. The Los Angeles Times closes the story with a quote from a close friend of Dr. Bourne, one John Ditley. He's a photographer and a former federal park ranger. He said, "I've spent a lot of time hiking the backcountry with Jonathan. He's a good man, but I also feel strongly that collecting antiquities on federal land is not legal and is, in a certain sense, immoral." I wonder about the qualifier there, that "in a certain sense" part. No, it's not immoral in a certain sense. It's immoral. It's illegal, and it's immoral. And it's also culturally disrespectful. And if you actually care about the science of determining the context and of where and how this stuff came into being, it is devastatingly unscientific. By the way, my reference to the word tragic, Roger in Oregon says it's their shorthand for expected trajectory. That's grimly accurate. I told you it was going to be a busy Morin Monday. And we're not done yet, because we've got more stupid. Well, we really couldn't be covering Morin Monday without, and no, I'm sorry, we're not gonna grandfather him. No, pastor, brother, governor, reverend, diabetes, snake oil salesman, presidential candidate Mike Huckabee is staying right in the mix. Oh, yes, he is. Because, see, he speaks for so many millions of American people. Reverend, pastor, governor, brother, reverend. Oh, I did reverend already. Diabetes, snake oil salesman, presidential candidate Mike Huckabee went on CNN's New Day program to explain why it is that them liberals, and especially the father of the gunman in Oregon, have it so wrong, because the gunman's own father said, you know, this wouldn't have happened if he hadn't had such easy access to damn many firearms. Or, you know, to the extent that the guy was unhinged, any firearms at all. "Hey, are you sane?" "Yep, I'm sane." "What color's the sky?" "Blue." "No, really, what color's the sky?" "Day glow pink." "Oh, you're sane. Here's a gun." Anybody ever tell you you're insane? "Oh, I mean, lots of people all the time. But that's only because I love guns." "I do too, and they tell me I'm crazy. 40 caliber or 45? So by all means, let's check in with pastor, brother, governor, reverend, diabetes cure, snake oil salesman, Mike Huckabee, shall we?
How on earth could he compile 13 guns? How can that happen? You know, they talk about gun laws, they talk about gun control. Every time something like this happens, they talk about...
This is the killer's father, by the way.
...about it and nothing.
And so Mike Huckabee is going to come on and just pee all over him.
And he's done.
Well, that was the father of the Oregon gunman speaking exclusively to CNN. Hillary Clinton is set to outline her gun control proposals today. So let's hear from the other side of the aisle. Republican presidential candidate, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee joins us now. Good morning.
Wait a minute. Because Hillary Clinton was going to introduce her gun solutions, some producer at Chicken Noodle News thought,
well, what we got to do here is find out what the lunatic right wing thinks and the millions who support them. I think back to when Ted Turner introduced the concept of a 24-hour news channel, and the world laughed at him. They said he was nuts. Well, you can't do news for 24 hours. There's not that much news on the whole planet, Ted Turner. He proved him wrong. And then Fox proved him really wrong. But the thing is, it's not that there's so much news on the planet. Yeah, there is 24 hours worth of news on the planet, but it's costly to produce. Oh, but if you pack those, let's see, what's that line from the poem, Rudyard Kipling, here it is, hold on. Let's see. If you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And which is more, you'll be a man, my son. The unforgiving minute. And of course, what the for-profit media figured out was that the unforgiving minute could not be filled by news, because news from all around the globe, there's 24 hours worth of news every day. But again, it's tough to produce, and it is TV, so you got to have some video there. It can't just all be readers. You got to have some. I mean, I remember way back 30 years ago, CNN had Mike Chinoy covering all of Asia, and what was her name, who covered all of Latin America, just flying around. It must have been a hell of a great job. But you got to pay those people to do that. And the transportation costs and the danger involved and yada, yada, yada. There was Frank Sesmatic in Washington. Yeah. But, and this is the genius of Rupert Murdoch, if you call yourself a news channel and then you do 22 hours of nothing but opinion, that's not so expensive. You just have to pay your millionaire attack blondes and your... Right. And, of course, that gets that spreads like crabgrass on an ill-kept putting green. So here, by way of introducing the idea that Hillary Clinton is going to have a gun proposal, some producer has been mind screwed enough within the universe of for-profit media to think that, well, what we got to do then is we got to get Mike Huckabee on. Or perhaps one of Mike Huckabee's subgrifters put out an outreach to Chicken Noodle News and Fox and what have you, saying, hey, presidential candidate, reverend, pastor, governor, brother, diabetes snake oil salesman Mike Huckabee is available to talk about that communist lesbian Hillary Clinton's gun-grabbing proposal because she hates freedom. And the producer went, kill. Yeah.
Here, even for this terribly upsetting topic, let's talk about what that father just said. He wanted to know how his son was able to stockpile 13 weapons. What's your answer?
You didn't put the hockey puck away, did you? Just check it.
Well, he was able to do it because nobody really reported any of the signs. This guy apparently was a loner. He exhibited some traits of behavior and attitudes that were warning signals, but nobody acted upon them. And he was able to obtain those weapons, some of which came apparently from his mother, some that he obtained. I think we always talk about what the weapon was, but whether it's a pressure cooker or whether it's a gun, we're dealing with people who are either deranged or they're very focused because they want to kill people in the name of terrorism. You know, we have a not so much a gun problem. We have a problem with sin and evil. This is an evil thing when people kill another person, and it happens way too often.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's deconstruct that for a moment, shall we? Yes, let's do. So Huxterby here, what's Malloy call him, Hucklenuts? Huxterby here says that nobody caught the warning signs. I wonder if he cleared that with the home office there at the National Rifle Association. Because, you know, even if you walk into a gun store with a clown suit, the NRA will tell you that the guy in the clown suit should have an absolute right to purchase a firearm. I mean, there's a great if we had somebody out there doing the kind of creepy faux journalism that the asshats on the right do, that's a great thing. You walk into the gun store, and I'm not saying with the clown makeup on your face, just wearing a clown suit. You know, big floppy shoes, polka dots, whatever. You walk into a gun store, and you go to buy a gun. And you talk about the relative stopping power of a 9mm versus a 40 versus a 45. Whether one should go with a wheel gun or a semi-automatic, you know, semi-automatics can jam, but wheel guns have a more limited capacity. And then you go, okay, well, I'll take that one. And the gun guy goes, okay, let me get the paperwork here. You ever been convicted of a felony? Nope. Ever been judged to be mentally deranged? He asks, psychologically unsound, whatever the language is. And he's asking this of a guy in a clown suit, and the guy in the clown suit goes, well, hell no. And, okay. Yeah, that'll be $952.17. You gonna need some ammo with that? Yeah, about 1,000 rounds. Got any extra magazines for that? Sure do. Going hunting, are you? Oh, yeah, I'm going hunting. Yeah, we missed the warning signs in Oregon. The only problem is, if anybody tries to do anything about the warning signs, well, the NRA will be there to argue for the rights of the insane to have access, the not judged insane yet. Because, see, until someone has been adjudged unhinged, that person can buy guns to his or her, and it's almost always his, isn't it, heart's content. Because if you offered up legislation, for instance, to say that anybody wanting to... I didn't get to the mute button. Note coming in from Arthur. Are you insane? Answer, I'm your little video. Woohoo! No. No? If you offered up legislation saying that anybody who wanted to purchase a firearm had to have a copy of a little certificate card saying, I have been judged sane enough to carry a firearm, well, the NRA would have kittens with crocheted tails. Infringing upon our... ability to keep armed bears. There ain't nothing says in the Second Amendment about how you got to be sane. It just says that we need it for freedom. Wolverines! Right? Right. So, Pastor, Brother, Governor, Reverend, Diabetes, Snake Oil, Cure, Salesman, Presidential Candidate Mike Huxterby. He's not serious. And by the way, it's a sin problem. Hey, who's capable of declaring what is and is not sin? And are we going to, what is that what we need? Do we need a pastor, preferably a fundamentalist, evangelical, literal interpreter of the Bible, Southern Baptist type behind the counter with the gun store owner guy? Or maybe the gun store owner should be that pastor. Are you a sinner, son? Do you plan to do any sinning?
There it is. There. No, I don't know how the NRA is going to feel about that either. Do you plan on committing any sins with this here firearm, son? Well, gosh, no. I'm going to use it to protect freedom. Sign here. God, these people are stupid.
And, you know, I hear people say we just have to do something, but we need to do something that makes sense and something that actually helps.
Of course. So let's talk about that, okay? Let's talk about those solutions, because I know...
Oh, yes, let's do. Because guess what? There's not going to be any solution. I'm just predicting. Granted, I don't have the moth-eaten old velvet wizard's robe with the appliqué moon and stars and will the kiss me in the dark baby done in glow in the dark invisible ink on the no, I don't. But I'm just predicting that he's not going to suggest anything that actually means anything in terms of maybe cutting down on the number of NRA Second Amendment death lotteries in this country. This also from Arthur. Sinner darn near killed her. Arthur's on a roll.
I know that you've said this is a mental health issue. In addition to being evil, as you just said, it's a mental health issue, not a gun issue. So let's talk about that. What is the solution? If you know someone, if you have a neighbor who is a 20-something-year-old guy, who is a loner, who is withdrawn, who lives with his mother, who has an arsenal of guns, what are you supposed to do?
Wait a minute. Under that standard, Alex Trebek can't buy a gun. Didn't he live with his mama? Don't talk about mama.
Well, all over New York City, and you've seen the posters that say, if you see something, say something. And I think that's really the basic premise that we ought to all operate under our, what I would call, the voluntary social contract.
Did this evangelical fundamentalist clown just say that we all need to be ratting on each other? So he wants us all to turn each other in for being nuts, and I'm sorry. I mean no disrespect to people suffering with the challenges of mental illness. That's just shorthand, and I apologize for it. But we all don't want guns, Mike. So wouldn't it be better just to take the people who want guns, and do just a basic. Assessment of their sanity? Because, see, the sanity of the people who get murdered isn't relevant. It isn't probative. The sanity of the shooter is. And by the way, more and more now, we gun the shooter down. Why? Because it is much more convenient to have a dead shooter than one that goes to trial, and we wind up 99 times out of 100 finding out that that person is as sane as you and me, and just had their mind preyed upon long enough to decide that they were going to go out and protect freedom with their Second Amendment rights. That's a little embarrassing when it turns out they're just steely-eyed, cold-hearted killers, isn't it?
If you see someone, if you know someone, whether it's in your family, you should say first, you know, try to find out what that person's all about and thinking. And if you need to, report them to the police and say, this is a person that is just exhibiting some behavior that...
Oh, I need another hour. I got to this too late. Because, see, if you do call the police and say, hey, listen, my neighbor, woohoo. Cops are going to say, well, if he does anything, let us know. One. Two, this is a clown who does not support universal single-payer health care and therefore does not support any kind of an expansion of mental health services in this country. So even though he wants us to rat out our neighbors And really, are we all competent to make that judgment? I mean, they might turn me in because I'm not in a church pew every Sunday. Well, you got to be crazy not to believe in Jesus. Hey, come along, sir.
God almighty.
It is a little bit creepy and frightening.
Sure,
I mean, I think that's better than going out to the people who are trying to protect themselves and say, we're going to come after you.
Well, sure, but what's the law? I mean, what is the law? If you go to the, if you call the police and say, my neighbor's kind of creepy, he never has had a girlfriend, he's a loner, he has a gun, actually...
Oh, right, right, so she wants him to, she wants him to rat out the guys who haven't had girlfriends. Reckon anybody in the gay community is going to have an issue with that? Then again, Mike Huckabee, under that standard, would drop the dime on Jesus Christ! Yeah, never had a girlfriend, lived at home, wandered around with a bunch of, with 12 other guys who wouldn't get jobs. I mean, that's, I mean, if you're in first century CE Palestine, that's a weird dude. Call the authorities. Then again, that's kind of what happened, isn't it? How'd it work out for your savior there, Mike? I just don't have time for this lunacy. Maybe we'll pick this up on Titanic Tuesday. I'll save this one. We got to get out of here. I'm so happy to be back. Golly Moses, I am. I mean, it was nice being out on the road, and I'm still kind of road weary from it all. But it was good. The meeting was good. The information gathered and gained and learned was good. As weird as it may seem for me to say this, it was good to see the South. But it's awful good to be back here where I feel like I belong. In our community. Talking amongst ourselves. Very good indeed. So thanks to all of y'all for joining in the conversation, this semi-epic filibobster that it was. Thank you very kindly indeed. Thanks to all of you who have helped support the program over the weekend and in my absence and this evening. Hopefully in the next few minutes maybe we'll see the last $25 of ASA's half-term half-wit challenge come in. That'd be awfully nice. Thank you very much indeed to this community you've helped create. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. I was looking, I didn't have time to get to the TPP story that news ninja Gene sent me. Thank you, Gene. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.